It's a cold and rainy night in the fight capital of the world, but that, my friends, just means it's a perfect evening to get connected to TKO Radio, the ultimate source for combat sports in all the land, of course. My name is Ariel Helwani. I'll be your ringleader for the next 2 hours as we discuss all the happenings from around the fight world. And as always, a tremendous collection of guests will be joining us tonight. In around 30 minutes, we'll welcome internet sensation and Elite XC heavyweight contender Kimbo Slice to preview his upcoming bout against MMA legend Tank Abbott. That fight, in case you haven't heard, is going down on February 16th in Miami. Then we'll be joined by Roy Jones Jr. to talk about his upcoming fight against Felix Tito Trinidad on January 19th at the Mecca, Madison Square Garden. And it's interesting because the Ultimate Fighting Championship just billed the Wanderlei Silva-Chuck Liddell fight at UFC 79 as 5 years in the making. So I'm thinking this one should probably be called 5 years too late, but nevertheless, always great to talk to a legend like Roy Jones. And speaking of UFC 79, the UFC's beautiful octagon girl, Ariane Celeste, will stop by for her best seat in the house segment because, well, she did in fact have the best seat in the house while watching GSP dismantle Matt Hughes and, of course, Liddell outslugging the axe murderer in front of a sold-out crowd in Vegas. But first things first, let me introduce you to my co-host. As always, the Olympic gold medalist, the current TNA heavyweight champion of the world, Mr. Kurt Angle. Kurt, how's it going? Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year, Ariel. It's going really well. Things are going good.
You know, where I come from, Kurt, the holiday season is all about spending time with your family, relaxing. But according to my observations, the last few weeks for you have been out of control. I mean, you were just in the northeast of Canada, Montreal, Gatineau, Quebec, Oshawa, doing some shows for TNA. Then you fly over to Tokyo for the big New Japan show fighting against Yuji Nagata, which we'll get to in a second. Then you fly back to Orlando for the TNA Final Resolution pay-per-view. I mean, this pretty much is the life of a champion, right?
Yeah, you know what? And right before Christmas, I had to fly over to Japan and defend my title a different time. So I only had a couple of days off the last few weeks. So, yeah, life on the road is rough. But, you know, as long as you keep your mind and soul and your heart into it, you try to make it fun and it's worth the money. You know, I love to wrestle. I love to, you know, get my hands dirty, and that's what I do. So I really enjoy going out there and entertaining the fans and performing, competing in front of the fans.
You know, before I die, I need to get my way over to Japan. You know, I'm trying to convince my fiance to have our honeymoon over there. It's a tough sell. But, I mean, I've heard so many great things about, you know, fighting in front of the Japanese crowd, you know, the way they treat the fighters, the way they treat the sport as a pure athletic contest. And you've had a chance to compete over there for many years. What was this experience like for you?
It was a great experience for many reasons. For one, you know, I did wrestle a great champion. Yuji Nagata is very well known over there. The Japanese fans, they're not the kind of fans that go crazy and scream and holler and go nuts. They pretty much sit on their hands and they watch the match and they study it and they watch it unfold. So you don't hear a lot of screaming or hollering until the end of the match. And that's because that's their style. They want to see two guys go at it, regardless whether it's wrestling or MMA, and they continue to be a great crowd, but they're not the type of crowd, the rowdy crowd that you have in the United States. They're more of a crowd that's more well-educated about what they're seeing, and they like to see how a match unfolds, whether it be MMA or professional wrestling. But the match I had with Yuji Nagata, it was a tribute to Chris Benoit, because the match I had with Chris in 2003 at the Royal Rumble, it was very, very much like that, and Yuji and I decided to make it like that.
Yeah, that bout at the Royal Rumble in Boston, Massachusetts, one of the greatest bouts in World Wrestling Entertainment history. All right, so you were over there in Japan, and just for a note for all the listeners, that fight will be airing on Spike TV this coming Thursday at 11 p.m. in a special called Global Impact, so stay tuned for that. It's a good thing Kurt didn't slip out who, in fact, won the fight. But let's talk about some news that was going down on this side of the globe. Your name coming up everywhere, especially in MMA circles, and I'm not sure if you heard about this.
I've heard a lot of things, but go ahead. Yeah, tell me.
On HGNet Fights, Inside MMA program, Ken Shamrock, IFL Commissioner Kurt Otto, had some interesting things to say about you. First off, Kurt Otto was saying that you know, when he brought you out to the IFL show in last September, after watching it, he sensed that you kind of got cold feet, and there appeared to be a sort of deal in place for you to eventually fight Ken Shamrock. Then Shamrock starts running his mouth, saying that, you know, you should go back to pro wrestling and forget about, you know, trying your hand at MMA. Would love to hear your thoughts on the sort of challenge that they kind of laid out there in so many words to you.
That's all they're doing. All they're doing is they're flapping their gums. They're trying to make me mad so I sign a deal with them. I'm worth more to them than those two combined. Kurt Otto and Ken Shamrock, I talked to them on numerous occasions. And the deal was, I was supposed to be a coach for a year. I was going to coach for the for New York and the Pit Bulls, and for about a year, get my feet wet, get some training underneath Enzo Gracie, and then we were going to decide or not whether I was going to fight. Then all of a sudden, after I watched a fight at the IFL, I decided, yeah, I'll do it here. This would be great. Kurt Otto decided that I would. He wanted me to fight in January. This was the end of October, so I had 2 months to get ready for the fight. And I was like, is this guy nuts? You know, he wants me to do this. Ken Shamrock called me, said, hey, I'd like to fight you, this and that. And I said, listen, it's great and everything, and I'd love to do it, but I can't even tell my boss to give me any time off to train, let alone, you know, go out there and I'm not going to go out there without any kind of formal training. And, you know, Ken Shamrock did want to fight me, and I did want to fight Ken. But I asked if I could have a six-month extension for their second pay-per-view, which would be 6 months after January, which would be around August, September, so I could get mentally and physically prepared for the fight. But they pushed me, and they kept pushing, and they kept pushing, and they kept pushing until it came to a point where I just quit calling, I quit answering the phone, and now Kurt Otto's telling you that I had cold feet. I was excited about being at the IFL. I like all MMA companies. I've been at many events. I've been, you know, around. I've been around UFC. I've been around IFL, Pro Elite XC. You know, I've actually tried to do deals with different companies, but they all fell through for many reasons, and none of those reasons were my fault. You know, I put up a figure, and they said, okay, we will amend that figure, but this is how we're going to do it, and it all had to do with stock options. And if I won the fight, and if we get enough house buys and pay-per-view buys, and then you'll get your money. And I was like, no, I want my money up front. If you're going to get a name like Kurt Angle, Olympic gold medalist, the best wrestler in pro wrestling, I want the money up front. If you can't do that, then I'm not going to fight. And all these companies basically, except for UFC, I will stick up for Dana White. He did give me a formidable contract. It was equal to Brock Lesnar's. But the fact is that Dana White would not let me wrestle, pro wrestle, and fight at the same time. I respected his decision, and he wanted me to make that decision, and he thought that I would go to UFC. But when I quit WWE, Dixie Carter and Jeff Jarrett were there for me. They stepped up to the plate. They matched my figures I was making in WWE. They were there to save me, and I was not going to turn my back on them when I had the meeting with them first. Now, if I didn't have the meeting with them and Dana White and I had that meeting a week after I signed with TNA, I probably would have ended up in UFC, and I would have been very, very happy with the figures, the money that they were going to give me. But I'm still happy with the money I'm getting at TNA. TNA is a great product. It's really starting to come into its own. We got a two-hour program. But going back to the mixed martial arts, you know, these companies, you know, sometimes I think some of them are fly-by-nights. You know, the only company that's really standing out right now is UFC. And, you know, maybe if Mark Cuban, who has enough money to get this thing rolling, he might be the next guy to step in. But as far as Pro Elite XC and IFL, you know, I'm starting to question, you know, if they have the funds, if they have enough motivation, if they have enough fuel in their tank to step up and be a company like UFC. I'm right. Not sure if they can. And that's questionable. I'm not saying they won't. I'm just saying it's going to be a very difficult time for them to be able to compete against UFC.
Yeah, Dana White always loves to say that any promoter out there that has two nickels and three letters and rubs them together, he all of a sudden thinks he can run an MMA promotion, and it obviously takes a lot more work than that. But it's interesting because, as you said, you're one of the most respected wrestlers in the history of the business. And now with all this stuff, when you have a guy like Kurt Otto, Ken Shamrock go on television and sort of call you out, and then you got people on the internet come out and say, well, Kurt Angle isn't interested in going into MMA, and he's just keeping his name out there. Does that bug you at all that people are taking shots at you when they really don't know the true story that, you know, this promoter didn't want to pay you up front and this guy, you know, was trying to rush you into a fight? Does that get under your skin at all?
You know what? It doesn't matter. I'm not an internet guy, to be honest with you. But, you know, my wife is, and she tells me a lot of stuff that's said about me. It doesn't really bother me. It's just, I don't want people to think of me as, you know, some kind of guy that, you know, is just trying to, like you said, keep your name in MMA and just kind of play with it and make people believe maybe I might come, maybe I might not. My interest was to ultimately fight in MMA. I wanted to do that. I might still do that. There's always an opportunity, but somebody has to step up to the plate and match my figure. That's the problem they're having. You know, I think that IFL, with all due respect to Kurt Otto and the company, I think that they have plummeted in as far as making money. I don't think they're making much money anymore. If anything, they've been losing money. I think Kurt Otto was looking for me as his savior to have a very big pay-per-view at that event. He was telling me that with Shamrock and I and the storyline and everything, we could do a million buy rates. And I think that he got really excited about that and thought, wow, this will really get my company jumping. On the other hand, you know, I'm looking at it as, okay, you just want to use me as a tool. You don't want me to be successful in MMA. You just want me to go out there untrained, not really prepared for it, and go out there and possibly get my butt kicked. And now, do I think Ken Shamrock could kick my butt? No way in hell. But that's beside the point. I mean, Kenny is a tough guy. And I will admit this, that the last two fights he had in the UFC, he laid down for Tito Ortiz. He didn't train. I was told by his trainer he did not train. He didn't get ready. He just collected his paycheck, and that's why Dana White let him go. And so Kenny is pretty pissed off at Dana, but it's his own fault. So now he's in IFL, and he's a coach, and he's doing okay. They're paying the coaches pretty decent money. But Kenny wants to fight again. And if he fights Kurt Angle, I'm sure that he will get prepared. So you haven't seen the last of Ken Shamrock. I mean, if he trains the right way and he gets prepared the right way, he's every bit as good as Randy Couture if you put him in the right atmosphere.
Right.
But if you let him try to train by himself, all he'll do is sit down and watch TV and wait for the fight to come up, for the date to come up. And yeah, that's Ken Shamrock. He has to be pushed. Kurt Angle, I don't have to be pushed. I can push myself. As a matter of fact, I trained alone for 4 years to make the Olympic team. Nobody coached me. I did it myself. I know how to do it. I know how to study tapes. I know how to train. I know what my strengths are, my weaknesses are. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Kenny and I are very different in many ways. I will not go out there and lay down for anybody to collect a paycheck. No matter, God forbid, if I was desperate or not, I would want to go out there and be as full prepared as I could. And that was the case in IFL. I wasn't ready, and they wanted me to do it.
All right,
Pro Lexi, they offered me a good sum of money. I'll tell you the price right now.
Go ahead.
I wanted $2 million. And what they did is they offered me $400,000 cash, and then they added stock options, and then they added pay-per-view buys, and then they added arena buys and all this stuff, and it all added up to $2 million for a fight. And I thought, well, what if they don't get that? They probably won't get that. And unbeknownst to me, 4 months later, their stock plummeted from $15 to, what, $1.80 a share? So they were offering me $100,000 of 100,000 shares, and basically the stock plummeted. So I wouldn't have made that much money, as much money as I wanted to. So the thing is, you know, I'm glad I didn't take the fight because I wouldn't have made what I wanted to. You know, in professional wrestling, I'm one of the highest paid wrestlers. I'm an Olympic gold medalist. I'm the most decorated, one of the most decorated athletes if I step in the MMA ring. And if I do that, I deserve to get paid one of the highest amounts. Brock Lesnar, he was an NCAA champion. I give him all the credit. The world is a great athlete, tremendous athlete, great size, speed, great skills, but he's not an Olympic champion. He's an NCAA champion. That is like 10 steps below an Olympic gold medalist. As a matter of fact, Brock and I got in the ring many times and wrestled like for real wrestle before the show, and I whooped his butt. Now, I'm not saying that's MMA, but that's a big part of MMA.
Right.
Is grinding the guy, get him down, and getting on top of him.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of these people think that, oh, Kurt's neck's messed up, he's too old, this and that. Hey, I can tell you this, if I trained for a full year, I could go back to the Olympics and win a gold medal again.
Well, I don't know if you need to do that now. You know, the fact that you've established yourself as one of the greats in the business, obviously, Kurt Angle, 11-time champion, and, you know, like you said, name coming up everywhere. So you mentioned Brock Lesnar. February 2nd, UFC 81, he's going to be battling Frank Mir in the UFC. It's going to be his second MMA fight, but let's be real, his first one in June was a total tomato can. This is going to be his first test against a former UFC champion in Frank Mir. And you know Brock better than anyone.
Yeah.
How do you think he's going to do it?
I think Brock, as long as Brock takes his time, if Brock tries to go out there and finish the fight very quickly, Brock might be in trouble because Brock doesn't have many weaknesses. His only weakness is, and that's also counting submissions and stand, on your feet, you know, throwing fists. He's pretty good at both of those. His problem is, when he gets in a debacle and he gets in trouble, he tends to shut down. He's done that in college wrestling a couple different times on a couple different occasions when he was supposed to win and somebody scored on him and he shut down and he ended up losing the match because he doesn't know how to come from behind and win. He has never had to do that. He has never done that. I've done that a million times. And, you know, you look at guys like Randy Couture, he's the kind of guy that he will not say it's over until the fight is over. With Brock, the only weakness he has is if he gets in trouble, he might shut down and that might be the end of the fight. Now, if he doesn't get in trouble, he could dominate the fight and win easily. So that's really up to Brock. And that's all I can say about Brock is that he has a lot of strengths. His only weakness is his mental ability to overcome some obstacles that might happen in the fight.
Interesting. So you think that despite the fact that Frank Mir is a former UFC heavyweight champion, he still does have a chance. This is his second MMA fight, not used to the striking. You know, obviously his prowess on the ground is second to none, but when you go in there in MMA and now you're going to take a punch to the face, it's a whole different ballgame, right?
It is a whole different ballgame, and that is questionable. Can Brock take a punch? Can Brock protect himself? You know, it's not the fact can Brock throw punches. It's can Brock protect himself, get this guy down, and get him where he needs to have him. I think he will. I don't think it's going to be an easy task for Brock, because I think Frank Mir is a great fighter. I have a lot of respect for him, but I also think that Brock will win this fight. I think Brock is in the prime of his career. He's 30, 31 years old. I mean, he's a beast. He's, 270 pounds. I just wrestled him about, 6 or 7 months ago over Japan, where we had a match where I made him tap out and I won the IWGP title. He looked great. He's in great condition. He's stronger than hell. And I just don't see anybody in that weight class that has the natural talent, natural ability, the size factor as far as muscularity, the quickness, even including Sylvia, the big giant Sylvia. I just don't think anybody in that weight class can go with him unless Randy Couture would come back. And I also question that because Brock might be a little bit too big, strong, and quick for Randy. And I'm not saying Randy can't beat him. Randy's capable of beating anybody. But Brock does have a lot. He has a lot of blessings from God, and his biggest blessing is how quick and powerful he is and how big he is.
All right, Kurt, before we head to commercial break, wanted to get your thoughts on another guy. You know, we're talking all about athletes jumping from one sport to the next, and over the holidays, boxing champion Floyd Mayweather Jr. threw his name into the hat, so to speak, getting involved with Mark Cuban, potentially to begin a career in mixed martial arts. And, you know, you and Floyd are kind of in the same place in your careers, both established stars, both guys that, you know, have the utmost respect by their peers in their respective sports, and now kind of trying to test the water, so to speak, in another sport. What are your thoughts on a guy like Floyd Mayweather making the jump to MMA?
I think it's going to be much more difficult for Floyd Mayweather to make the jump because boxing is so much different than MMA. I mean, you know, obviously the striking is going to be incredible. But if anybody gets Floyd down, he's in trouble. If he gets trained properly, to be honest with you, he's been training his whole life boxing. It's going to take him 2 years to get even, I would even say, fairly good in MMA. I think what's going to happen with him is he's going to be very exciting to watch. He might get a couple of licks on a couple of guys, knock them down, maybe get on top of them, and something's going to happen where the guy gets him in a submission hold and he's going to tap out. Either that or somebody, as he's going to throw a punch, will attack him, take him down, ground and pound him, and then he'll be in trouble again. So I think boxers are probably the least effective fighters in MMA because they don't really know how to ground and pound. They don't know how to fight from the back. They only know how to fight on their feet, and that's just a small aspect of the whole gamut of MMA. And I think that Floyd is going to have a big wake up call that they're going to have to throw a few tomatoes at him and let him get some confidence before they put him in a big fight. The question I have is, what is a guy like Floyd Mayweather that's making what, $10 to $30 million a fight,
right?
Get into mixed martial arts, and maybe making $2 to $3 million. I don't understand his philosophy on that. I don't think it has anything to do with money. I don't think it has anything to do with his desire to be in it. I think it has a lot to do with pride because MMA is coming on strong. And he wants people to believe that he is the baddest dude in the world. He's going to have a big wake-up call when he ends up. What class would he be in, do you know?
He would be in featherweight, so that he'd probably fight at 145. He boxes at 147, but, you know, obviously in MMA, it's a 145 weight class at featherweight. So, you know, there was talk that the UFC wanted to put him up against Sean Sherk, who at the time was the UFC lightweight champion at 155. I would think he would be better matched up against a 145er, someone like Uriah Faber, the featherweight champion in the WEC.
Sure. You know, how do you think he'd do against Pulver? I think Pulver would pretty much... I think Pulver would probably annihilate him.
Yeah, it's exactly what you said. I mean, in boxing, it's really one tool, and it's a great one, the striking. But when you get into MMA, the fact that a guy can shoot on him, take him down, and then it's a whole other world for him. When you get into the jiu-jitsu side of things, going for the submissions, the arm bars, the rear naked chokes, the guillotines, it's
you're right. You know, and it's all that. And people know all that. People all know about the jiu-jitsu and the arm bars and the submissions and the takedowns and everything. But what they don't know about boxing is, you know, once a boxer turns his back, they have to break the fight and start again. You know, if Floyd slips a punch, you know, his instincts might be, okay, rest, stop the fight because my back's turned toward the guy. You know, so he has to change his whole philosophy on fighting and say, okay, everything goes here. If I slip a punch and I miss a guy, I got to turn around and protect myself and be ready. You know, so Floyd has a lot of work ahead of him, and I don't think he's going to you know, train as hard for MMA as he has done for boxing. This would be very new to him. I think it's more of a publicity stunt because, you know, I will say, you know, myself, being an Olympic gold medalist in wrestling, many wrestlers have done very well in MMA. As far as boxers, I can't think of a boxer that did really that well.
Yeah, there's guys like Francois Botha who tried to try his hand in MMA, failed. Ray Mercer kind of had an exhibition against Kimbo Slice. That didn't go so well. So, yeah, if he did make the crossover, he would absolutely be the biggest star by far to ever succeed in mixed martial arts.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, actually, I'd love to see him do it. You know, my hat's off to him for having the gall and the balls to do it. But, you know, I just think that he has to be very careful and realize he has to know all aspects and all rules to MMA because, you know, like I said, on your feet, you know, when you're fighting and, you know, you slip a punch and you end up tied up with the guy, the ref stops the fight. If he's tied up with me, I'm going to launch that bastard on his back and he's in trouble. So, you know, there are a lot of aspects that they're not allowed to do in boxing that you're allowed to do in MMA that he's going to have to learn. And he's got a long road ahead of him, a lot longer than me. You know, I trained for about 5 months in MMA, and I started picking up very well, very quickly. I was very good on my back and protecting myself. My striking started to get very well. The only thing I was weak at was submission holds, which I was starting to learn. But, you know, then again, you know, you look at Randy Couture, he's not really a submission guy either. He's a very well-conditioned athlete that just keeps going. That would probably be my style. But, you know, I just think that a wrestler has a much better chance at success in MMA than a boxer. But, you know, he's such a great athlete. You just never know what's going to happen.
You're listening to TKO Radio. Ariel Helwani, as always, being joined by the heavyweight champion of TNA, Mr. Kurt Angle. Kurt, stick around. After the break, we'll be talking to Kimbo Slice. Then we've got Roy Jones Jr. joining us here on TKO Radio and, of course, the beautiful Ariane Celeste. You're listening to TKO Radio.